Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Talisa Padgett, who has spent 20 years focusing on leveraging technology and data to improve marketing effectiveness and consumer experiences. She joined Microsoft in 2022 as the general manager of the Marketing Technology Platforms and AI, where she leads marketing technology solutions and the Gen AI Center of Excellence. Prior to that, at Comcast and Under Armour, she redefined team roles, instituted new processes, and removed duplicative systems for more effective tech stacks. Having also worked at Marriott International, MarketBridge, and ServiceMaster, Talisa understands the nuance of how data and technology can be applied to solve business problems at scale. In addition to her role at Microsoft, Talisa is the co-founder of Empathy Coaching. Empathy Coaching provides career guidance and wellness coaching, helping individuals feel empowered to navigate their lives and professional journeys authentically. When she's not working, in that few moments of time, she enjoys traveling, hiking, meditating, and spending time with her family and close friends. Please welcome Talisa.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. I'd like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
I mean, where I was born and what did my parents do went hand in hand. I was born in Japan in a military Air Force base, Yokota Air Force Base outside of Tokyo. My parents were both in the Air Force. My mom and my dad were very ambitious and wanted to use the military as a way to deliver a better life for us. And they did.
Wow. So you probably lived a lot of different places then, I'm assuming.
I moved every year until I feel like I was like in middle school.
Wow.
Texas twice, Arkansas, Mississippi, mostly in the South. And then my mom retired in California, which is where it was her last Air Force base.
I love it. We travel, something that I love to do. And so hearing, I'm kind of jealous of the fact that you got, might have been not the best to move every year, but you know, to have those experiences is incredible. Yeah. So during all that, so growing up as a kid, did you have an idea of what you wanted to be when you grew up? Was it to go into the Air Force? Was it traveling?
Well, I will say, honestly, both my parents were like, you have to be better than us. Like, that was a narrative that I heard all the time. And while I appreciated it, it helped me be who I am. I think I chose between doctor and lawyer because those were like, you know, what you see on the Cosby show was like either or that was going to be create affluence. And luckily, you know, becoming a lawyer did not work out for me. I still love elements of that. I love history. I still read a lot. And I love to not argue, but debate a point because I can see both sides.
Yeah. Well, I am the son and grandson of judges and did go to law school, but was never a lawyer.
Okay.
I understand. I like to quote John Lennon, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. So so you kind of start out in marketing. Have you always been interested, but you're in kind of the technology space. So when did you first kind of get a love of technology, and was it tinkering or things like that, gadgets? When did you kind of find your way where you're like, oh, this tech thing is kind of cool?
That's a great question. I mean, I ended up not becoming a lawyer because I didn't want to go to school that long. One of the other things that I really enjoy is art. I paint, I draw. And so I wanted to go to art school. And my parents, again, having this kind of passion to be successful, art school is not something that they really supported. And so I was like, they said just business. And so I was like, marketing. It's in the business category. I could get a degree. They would be happy. And that's how I got into marketing. How I got into marketing tech kind of was by chance. My first job out of college, it was print marketing. And I spent a lot of time working with field sales reps on producing collateral. So I'd ride along with them, understand the customer's needs, and then go back and write copy and work with the printer to produce like brochures, pamphlets, you know, kind of printed marketing material. And finally, I was like, why don't we try email? And I think this was like 2004. And my leadership team at the time was like, no one's going to use it, but sure, if you want to play around. And so I worked with ExactTarget, which became Salesforce. And that was my first MarTech thing in my first job. And I think I've just used data and tech throughout.
It's a great combination. It's a kind of, I always joke with people, I have an active right and left brain. And so kind of business marketing gets you to play with both. And I think it's really fun. I have to ask, so how did you end up at Microsoft? And if you could share, what is the Gen AI Center for Excellence?
Sure. I've had a really great career where I've actually, and sometimes it doesn't work out. Some people say, oh, I've never applied for a job and they don't have the best career. I've never applied for a job and I've had an incredible career. I was at Marriott for t 9, 10 years and I raised my hand from going from project management to product management, which led me to a role in digital marketing solutions. And I was doing media tagging. I was there when we when Marriott acquired Starwood, so I got to do a lot of web integration work. And that's how I got really into marketing tech. I left that company and went to Under Armour and went to Comcast, and all these MarTech positions that I've had, was just another stepping stone. But I think maybe 2009, 2019, sorry, 2008 or 2019, I recognized that, a lot of people are talking about things online, and I actually loved marketing technology. And so I just started posting on LinkedIn, and that created a little bit more visibility. So both Comcast and Microsoft were recruitments. People reached out and said, hey, we have this position. Would you consider it? So very blessed to have gotten a call from Microsoft. And interestingly enough, at the time, this was in 2021, so people were more online. I had an offer both from Google and Microsoft, which was a blessing. I mean, not a flex, but a flex, and very
Hey.
grateful.
Incredible. I'm not going to ask why you picked Microsoft over Google, but I will kind of ask, when did the kind of AI moment happen for you? Because you've been in MarTech a long time, so you may have had some instance where you've come across it earlier than the Gen AI moment. So what's your kind of background? How did you like, you're working very distinctly in the AI field now. How did that come to be, and did you expect it, or what's your experience there?
I'll say two things. I'm a hippie, so as I mentioned, I've always been open to what is offered and provided. When I accepted the Microsoft role, one, because it was 100% remote and I didn't have to go to New York on the train all the time. And two, I was actually really excited about the scope of Microsoft's marketing department and the technology with that, and all the work that I think MarTech could enable for the organization. When I accepted my position, my manager at the time added on AI to my job description and
Little did she know.
hey, since we've talked, and as I thought about it, he gave me this data science team that was leading signal flow routing and account-based recommendations. That was a team of data scientists that were playing in all these models and really trying to determine what was the best indicator that a customer is ready to talk to the sales team. Now, I had never really worked with data science like that. I had managed analytics teams before, and as I mentioned, I've done web and I understand a lot about data and how you can kind of get insights from data. When you add on the data science piece, I really was intimidated, but it opened the doors because you're right. It was at 2022. We already were tinkering with models. And then when generative AI came out, my team was primed to continue to explore. So we started building out custom models for specific marketing solutions, one around licensing. We had a different capabilities that we were trying to see if AI could help us and actually help the marketing team be more effective by. And that just kind of grew. It went from me communicating different projects, testing both third party and building internally, using our own products, and then really it was like, let's go build a center of excellence so we can centralize marketing AI development for the entire organization.
But marketing and AI, there's been some amazing elements that come out of it, but there's also been some fear, especially from kind of the creative side. You talked about being, an artist, and design has been in your past. And so what do you think that the impact is on the creative services now and looking ahead.
I think that our lives and jobs will change with the proliferation of AI. But I don't think of it as anything to be fearful about. It's similar to the tech boom. It's similar to, digital transformation and marketing, right? As I mentioned, I was in print, we went to email, and now everything is all about social media and ads and engagements and, tracking everything that you do. And so I think AI is that next iteration, particularly for creative people. I'm working with designers right now. I'm testing out Firefly and GenStudio from Adobe. We've built some internal content supply chain agents and trying to improve the creative process end to end, including the handoffs, but also including the assessment of the asset product, that's once it's produced. And that could be intimidating because those are elements of design that they've, historically held on to. What I think is for designers that embrace it and recognize what it's good at and also recognizing what it's not good at, you can delegate some of the things that are less valuable to you in your time and free up more mental capacity to go and drive different changes and the new evolution of design.
Yeah, that's my, people talk about the fear and some of the jobs and things, and I've been one. The promise of AI, I think, is that it takes away some of the stuff either that we don't want to be doing or don't need to be doing, so we can focus on the things that are more significant or new, like that haven't been, exploding in terms of what's possible. I think that's the thing that I really love about AI, is it's there are things we haven't even thought of that are going to evolve because the technology is very powerful.
For sure.
What do you find kind of most challenging in your current role?
It's challenging, but it's the opportunity. So, don't be offended when I say that. It's mostly the people. It's not about the tech, right? Because we have underlying MarTech that have been in place, like email platforms and workflow tools. And now agents can be bolted on and help improve and kind of accelerate some of those things. I'm so grateful to work at Microsoft. I work really closely with our marketing engineering department. We have really close relationships there. And so we build a lot of bespoke solutions for those teams. And we take feedback, right? What do you need this to do? Where is this not working? How can we make this something that you would adopt? And ultimately, when we get to that point of UAT, there's 7,000 reasons why this isn't going to completely change my process. Or I can use this, but I don't know that I'm really ready to get rid of my, agency. Or I can use this, but I'm still kind of like holding on. And so I'm spending more time now recognizing that we need to be working on mindset shifts. We need to be painting a picture for what people's jobs will be in the future versus just taking and changing their current job without giving them something to look forward to. So the biggest challenge right now is adoption and mindset.
And you find adoption, you're talking within Microsoft, because Microsoft being a tech company, do you find that there's still adoption issues within the tech company as opposed to just the general public adopting things?
Yeah, I mean, general public are employees at Microsoft, right? Like we're still humans. And we do work in a technology organization. Satya Takeshi, our CMO, is like, he's been talking about AI usage for 3 years at this point. There's no reason why people should not be chomping at the bit, except it's change. And change is hard, no matter if you're asking someone to change their favorite toothpaste or change their, the way they do their entire job. There's a mental gymnastics that sometimes has to go along with that. And even though Takeshi's encouraging people, and he's really actually released a really great memo that speaks about the marketer of 2030, marketers have to understand that they can come along or they may get left. And that's not something Takeshi's saying. I'm just saying, in general, marketers at any organization need to embrace AI because that is where the trend is going. That's where all companies are trying to drive. I'll say one thing, I do a lot of executive briefings as be on behalf of Microsoft because I'm in this space, and the same fear and the same concern around Teams happens to every organization.
Yeah, it's funny what you talk about. I said, the AI train is going, and if you don't get on board, you will be left behind. And like, it's not really, and not just for marketers, it's for everybody. Like, I think, marketers have kind of been a little more in the fray of what's going on, but I don't think there's any industry that's not going to be impacted by AI. And hopefully, positively. You know, that's my, I'm a, an AI optimist. So, so when you talk about, you know, we're all human, well, there's debate about, you know, how human is the machine. So in kind of the AI age, what makes us kind of uniquely human?
Well, I mean, I didn't name my business Empathy Coaching for no reason. I don't know that the models will always get nuance or context, because context changes all the time. So even if it can provide an answer that's generally aligned and includes softer tone or empathetic considerations, if you're meeting, engaging with your manager in a meeting on Tuesday, and then something happened or there was some changes and something was rolled out, your presentation that you started working on Tuesday needs to change. Even if you just kind of, you know, are using an agent to help you with that, it's not, it's going to miss the subtleties. It's going to miss the nuance of what your leader was really concerned about. And so you're always, in my mind, I'm hopeful that AI will be a baseline, kind of the foundation of how we work. And then there's that human element of emotional awareness and connection that gets put on top of it, right? You can all see the emails that are generic versus the one that somebody put some energy into or even edited.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's not, you know, I don't think it's a, you know, machine intelligence or human intelligence. That's why I have the concept of connected intelligence. It's really the combination that's going to really make, I think, the world a better place. At least that's my hope.
I've been kind of saying, and I'm don't take this, but I've been thinking about with my business partner, like EI and AI and how they work together. And I'm definitely helping people with that transformation and that wrapping their head around, like, hey, in order for people to embrace AI, one, we need to be leading with emotional intelligence and being aware of their fears. But two, when we think about where we plug in AI, we want to actually bias places where we need the human versus where we don't.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, again, the benefits that will come from partnering with AI are only going to come if we include the human element in it and focus on that part. And I think that's again, what I hope and think, you know, that we have the right people who are working hard to make that, you know, to be, it's interesting, there's a discussion between AI first and AI forward. And for me, you know, because some people say that AI first means not human. And so I think it's, which is why I kind of like, you know, the AI forward is a little more like, but I think AI first doesn't mean not human. It just means thinking that way, you know always, because that's the way we're going to evolve. Like, it just
means it's like digital life. Yeah, it's like digital native organizations, right? When they start out and they're built on the capability versus, oh, I can use that after I've already planned out my whole end-to-end process. No, building with AI in mind is going to help people be successful.
And, you know, Paul Reutzer at the Marketing AI Institute, he talked about the three types of companies of the future, of modern society, which is AI native, which are companies that are starting up now that are going to embed AI in everything they do. Mm-hmm. You know, AI emergent, which are companies that aren't AI and now are, you know, integrating it. And I love the third one, obsolete. That's it. That's your choices.
That's actually a great point.
Yeah. So let me just switch gears, because we talked about we're talking about the human element, and you were, you know, had so little to do, and you decided to start empathy coaching. Tell me about that, and why you decided to do it, and what it's all about.
Well, it's really driven by two things. One, my wife, who is my business partner, she saw that I had a passion for it. I spent a lot of time coaching and mentoring people. Even out at Microsoft, I mentor people outside of my business, because I did not have anyone that looked like me when I was coming up in corporate America. I've actually had the conversation. I became successful before D&I was a thing. And a lot of my mentors, who I still value and appreciate, are white men who have the ability to talk and be different and say what's on their mind and just not really have to, you know, they don't have to worry about being themselves and being a good leader at the same time. And so what I wanted to do was, you know, continue to help people that look like me, but also people that may not even recognize their own talents. I have a lot of clients that are really working on their confidence. And so I wanted to do that because I just see a need. And so my partner was like, hey, you spend a lot of your time doing this. We should really kind of put a structure behind it. And then the other piece beyond wanting to do that, offer help, is that I do want a world where there people lead with empathy. And not that it means that, because I can understand that somebody's in a bad mood, that I don't have to directly challenge that person. But I'm not going to take it personal if, somebody's got a tone. Like, I can't really correct his tone. I'm going to focus on what I need to do. I'm going to walk away. Versus so many of us will be wondering, what did we do? And how many times did we impact that? And was our work not good enough? And so recognizing a lot of the emotions that come in corporate America and helping dispel what that means, having people not take that on. That's something that I worked through a lot as I was climbing the ladder. And so I just want to share.
Yeah, it's funny. I just keep thinking, I have two daughters who are in college, and it's leading with empathy, I think, is such an important piece, no matter what you do, and being self-aware. Because I think one of the things is that people are operating in their little way, and they're not even recognizing the impact they're having, and not intention, the consequences that they're having that they don't want to be having. So it's a combination of, having the confidence to be authentic while also being, compassionate and empathetic and considerate and all these, even polite, like, oh my God, polite. Can we be polite, please?
And people that lead with empathy actually are more successful because you have natural followership. People want to talk to you. They're also not afraid to share if there's issues. Like, there are literal studies about somebody being so afraid to talk to their manager or having a project fall behind that the whole thing fails because you can't be honest about what the challenges are. And so creating an environment with psychological safety at different levels of the organization is also critical for business success. So
Yeah, as someone who, espouses a lot about effective communication, it's like if you can't even have the conversation,
what
you
are we
can't.
doing here?
Yeah, what are we exactly? We're all on the same team here. Let's try and, and I mean that kind of globally, we're all on the same team, but I'm not a political guy, so I'll go.
Yeah, same.
So I if you have done all these incredible things, if you were to go back to your 21-year-old self and give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is that you can and you will. I had so many doubts as a child. I love my parents and they made me who I am, but they definitely made me go into so many different situations, right? I was often the only black kid in my school. I used to figure skate. I had to play a
Didn't
musical
know
instrument. I had to do a sport and I had to do an academic activity. These are requirements. So I was the mathlete. I was an academic decathlon. I was an honors club. I was student class president. I was prom queen. I was constantly
that.
very much an underachiever, right?
So an
But
underachiever.
it really made you doubt yourself because when you're trying to navigate between all these different environments, you kind of start getting imposter syndrome. I don't look here, or I don't feel like I fit in here. And then when you get to corporate America, it's like, this doesn't make sense. Like, why are we not using email? But like, can I say that to my leader? Will they feel challenged? Can I, So I had a lot of insecurities about how I showed up. And I think that has to do with also how, because I moved a lot and I always had to make new friends. So my advice would be you can, if it's in your mind, if an idea comes to you, that means that you can go achieve it. And also that I learned this probably maybe 10, 15 years ago. 10 years ago, I had a leader at the time say, they don't know what you're going to say. So you're worried about getting your script exactly right and trying to, oh my God, I have this presentation. They don't know what you're going to say. Like, just talk, know your stuff, show up and do the work and trust yourself.
Yeah, I'm a professional speaker and I work with a lot of professional speakers, and a lot of training, they're like, if you're on stage and you forget a line or nobody knows, like, they don't know what you're gonna say. So just roll with it
Roll with it.
and realize that you're in control. I think that's the other thing, is that you're the one up here. When you're presenting, you're the one who's, sharing. And if you share again, if you share authentically, I think then it, whether you mess up or whatever, it doesn't matter. Because it's how you show up that really matters, in a lot
I
of
actually
cases.
love that because if you're showing up to share, and showing up to share knowledge or wisdom or something you've learned, or even just something you're curious about and you have questions, right? That presence of how you show up is different than when you're showing up because you know everything, you're going to tell everyone, right? So, like, again, leading with empathy and being compassionate about other people and how they show up, but mostly also being compassionate with yourself. You're not going to be perfect 100% of the time. You do your best, but you're also there to hopefully share and give knowledge to someone else, right? Like I said, in these executive briefings on AI, they're trying to figure it out just as we're trying to figure it out. And it's okay when I don't know the answer. It's okay when my leader doesn't know the answer.
And that's a hard lesson, I think, that people to recognize, like, I don't have to have all the answers. Like, and I think it's, that curiosity to me is such an important element in being successful and as a leader being successful. You know, it's about surrounding your world with people who are going to, lift you up and make you better, make the organization better. And if it's just down to the one person, it's going to be their little, that's why you have a team. And that's why you have other people who, to bring to the table. And
Different
yeah, it,
perspectives.
right. It's, yeah. And I, for me, that's part of why I like to travel. You get different perspectives and it helps you see things, in a different way that can help you achieve more and bring other people along. Speaking of achieving, you've achieved a ton, even, all those things that, you, early on, and then obviously, you're working for Microsoft and you just start, you're an entrepreneur and all these things. And so by most, stretch, people would say that you are a success. But I like to ask, how does Talisha define success?
You actually just said a really great word of I love to be curious. So for me, success looks like learning and growing in the fact that I'm taking on new challenges. I mean, my partner and I actually try to go to a different restaurant every month and try a new thing. Like, as funny as it sounds, I love the same hiking trail, but anytime we go on vacation, I find a hike, right? Not that I can't just enjoy and go be on the beach, but it's like I want to go and learn or see something else. I want to see different terrain. I want to challenge my body in different ways. And so for me, success looks like staying curious, learning and doing new things. I think I like marketing technology and now AI because it's not the same year over year. Some people that are in finance, you're going to be doing finance. Some things may change, but you have set principles. I like to change and evolve. And so success is all about evolution and growth and curiosity.
My feeling about that, and I love that answer is, because I love to learn as well, and I don't understand. I kind of don't understand how people don't because to me, if you're not learning all the time, life must be so boring. Like, I don't know. That's just, maybe that's my bias, but
We're
I
aligned
think
there.
it keeps, it keeps things interesting, and dynamic and, colorful. So let me ask you just about AI in general. So if someone, because it's still new, it's still early, and I think some
Yes,
people
very
were
early.
don't think it is, and they're like, oh my God, I've missed the boat. If someone was like, I want to, get learn more about AI, where do I start? So what would you say to someone who's like, what should I go do?
Well, I like to start small in any task. Anytime you're learning something new, it's not let's eat the whole cake at one time. So for me, it's like let's get in a tool, ideally Copilot, and start to practice, right? I think prompting is a skill, but it's not something that you need to go to school for 75 years to do, right? Like maybe Google some basic prompts, and there's some kind of structure that I always like to, think about, which is like, what's the context of the situation I'm inquiring about? So setting that really clear, like I am looking to write a paper for this class. This class is focused on this. So you have to almost talk to the prompt and give it enough detail to actually make the output great. Otherwise, if you're like, I need an essay for a class, it's going to give you the generic thing, right? So when I think about starting with AI, start with prompting, start with kind of engaging like you're having a conversation. Help me with this. And I need this for this thing, but I wanted to include this. I want it in this format. So it's like the context, the ask, anything that it should reference. And then again, reference like the format. You can change the order. Some people, there's a lot of insight on how to write the best prompt, but I would just start with one tool and practice prompting on something that you do regularly, whether that's write a PowerPoint, you need copy for that. You don't, like I said, you don't have to boil the ocean. Think about things you do a lot, even if it's writing an email. Start there.
Yeah, I think that's great, right? I think people, I talk about AI overwhelm. I was like, oh, you know, so it's like, just, I said, go and experiment, go have some fun, play with it. You know, when it's not life and death, it's just about, and you'll start to see where it's really going to add value. Like, oh, wait, it can do that.
Yeah, I think the word play is the right way to approach getting into AI. If you think you're playing around and you're not so fearful, but you're approaching it from curiosity perspective, you'll see how it adds value quickly, and then you can pivot and make it more tailored to what you need.
Well, I have a newsletter called AIQ, and the tagline is "Be curious." So that's the
Yeah.
idea. Like,
I'm
okay,
going to be.
Talisha, we're going to go into the rapid fire. We'll see how rapid they are, but
I'm long-winded.
yeah, so am I. That's the problem. If a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
Regina Hall. And I just have to give context because not everyone, like, she's a black actress. She is very talented, went to Juilliard, but also is like a comedic actress. So she did like the Scary Movie film. She's was like, I think, on Nine Perfect Strangers, like very vast in her acting ability, but cute, quirky. I love her.
Speaking of which, can you name one of your favorite movies?
Shawshank Redemption. I
It's the
love
best movie
that.
ever. That's
It's
my
the best.
favorite
Man, it is a great movie. I do love comedies. As I mentioned, I just named, my actress, favorite actress, but I think if I had to watch a movie over and over, there's just so much nuance in the story, and it's just so beautiful. Again, it's about the triumphs of life. You can't go wrong with Shawshank.
Yeah, busy living. Can you name this, you know, can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
I always tell everyone, What Happened to You by Oprah and another doctor, and a doctor I don't know his name. It's really good. It helps you kind of recognize that your past is your prelude, right? It did set the course of where you're going. And often it helps, shape and rec it helps you recognize like your behaviors, your triggers, and not that you need to get rid of them or be saddened by them, but if you don't know why you react and you're trying to, excel in an area and you're like getting can't handle all these situations, it's just not really great. So knowing your stuff, working through your stuff is important, and that book's framing was really transformative to me because things aren't always done to me, but even the context of, hey, this is what happened to me, which makes me feel like somebody did something to me. It was profound.
Shocking. Oprah had something profound. Okay. Now this is, I don't know. I was thinking of whether I should put some context of what your favorite AI tool is, whether I should let you say Copilot or not. So I'm going to ask you, of course, that Microsoft Copilot's your favorite. So other than Microsoft Copilot, what's your favorite AI tool? Or one of?
ChatGPT. ChatGPT, I have the, I don't even remember what it's called. I have the more deep version, the deep knowledge version. I started trying to build a bot. I've used it a
Custom
lot for my,
GPTs, yeah, I love
yeah, I've
those.
used it a lot for my business, right? To do a lot of research because
Oh,
I'm
deep
not a
research
psychologist.
was amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite emoji?
The heart, the red heart in particular. I'm a red heart girl. Or the emoji with the heart eyes.
I'm a purple heart guy, as
Of
maybe
course.
not surprising to anyone.
I wore purple for you.
I love it. Thank you. I am a little obsessed, as anyone who knows me knows. Do you have a favorite non-digital activity?
Hiking. Or being out in nature. I took meetings yesterday outside in Philadelphia. It's beautiful. Hearing birds chirp, seeing like just the green so bright and vivid. It's a really great mental reset.
Couldn't agree more. Is there something you can't live without?
I try to say that I'm adaptable, right? I change is my thing and I can deal with pretty much most changes. I do love my partner's the smell. I don't know, it feels like home. It sounds so gross. I don't mean anything like super close, just like being in the same room. And I think there's some science behind like people's smells and pheromones and how like relaxing that is. So that's really calming for me. The other thing I think would just be like pen and paper. I still journal almost every day. I write my notes like I'm 20, you know, not 20. I write my notes like I'm 8 years old. I don't use notes and all of that. I just like to have it in my head.
Awesome. And finally, if you could be credited with inventing something that does exist or something that doesn't exist, what would it be and why?
Well, in my earlier in my career at Marriott, I did work on developing what became a product and then it got sold. And so shout out to Nicholas Ward at Coty. He already had a bid management platform, and at Marriott we worked on this concept of combining our franchisees' advertising CPC spend with our internal marketing team spend. And so really we called it the Plus platform, and there were like 9 or 10 marketing tactics, including search, you know, travel ads, you know, hotel ads, all these different CPC advertising capabilities. And so Marriott was focused on driving people to a market like Los Angeles, but the LA Live, you know, JW wanted people to book there. So we could kind of combine those dollars and make sure we're always at the top of any search algorithm, or any, sorry, not algorithm, but any search place. And it really worked. And so that product got sold. I also think, you know, stay tuned with what the next business idea is with my partner and I. We're churning out something soon. So,
I love that.
yeah.
Giving this little intrigue there. So, what with things you can share? So, you've been so generous with your time. Is there anything you're promoting that you want to share or you want people to know more about?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think if you follow me on LinkedIn, be great. I try to post things that are helpful. I write for martech.org, so I'm always writing about things in the space. My latest article was released last 2 weeks ago, and that's literally on the human side of AI transformation and gives really good tips. Empathy coaching, you can find us at Empathy Coaching LLC on LinkedIn and Instagram. You can also go to our website, trueempathycoaching.com. And learn about our packages. We both obviously, I focus on career coaching, but my partner focuses on wellness coaching. She's just, you know, completed a couple more certifications in this space. And so we really think about trying to help somebody be their whole self. I'm also posting, you know, weekly tips on LinkedIn about how you could leverage empathy in your career. And a lot of those tips are about, you know, how to avoid burnout. Are you getting triggered by your colleague? You know, what do you do if someone's taking credit for your work? And all these situations that we go through in corporate America. So follow me, follow Empathy Coaching on LinkedIn and Instagram to get those tips each week, every Monday.
I'll make sure I include those in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks.
And it's, you know, it's funny because and then there's that something's coming soon. I kind of like, you
Something's
know,
coming soon.
stay tuned and
We're launching a new business. We're finalizing trademark. So I don't want to say the name of the business yet, but that's another reason why I'm doing a lot of research. But it will definitely be about emotional intelligence and this new evolution of AI and helping organizations get prepared. I'll say that.
I'm excited to find out more, and I already follow you on LinkedIn, and you do provide incredibly helpful, engaging content. So I would recommend anyone who's interested in being a good human in the tech world to follow Talisha. Again, thank you so much for your time and your insights and your humanity, and also thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQnewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes,
I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.